नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 6, Purusha Sukta, confirmed, text 34. Nabharati menga misho panlakshate.
Nabharati menga misho panlakshate.
Navaikachin me manaso mishagati. Name Hrishikari Patantya Satpate Yanme Hradaut Kanchavata Drito Hari. Na, never. Bharati. Statements. Ne, mind. Anga. Narada. Mrsha. Untruth. Upalakshate. Proved to be. Na. Never. Vai. Certainly. Kwachit. At any time. Me. Mine. Except that first me should be a mine, not mind. Manasa, of the mind. Mrsha, untruth. Gati, progress. Na, nor. Me, mind. Hrishikani, senses. Patanti, degrades. Asatpate, in temporary matter. Yat, because. Me, mind. Hrida, heart. Out kanchavata, by great eagerness. Excuse me, by great earnestness. Drita, caught hold of. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to have been false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter. Purport. Lord Brahma is the original speaker of Vedic wisdom to Narada. And Narada is the distributor of transcendental knowledge all over the world to his various disciples like Vyasadeva and others. The followers of Vedic wisdom accept the statements of Brahmaji as gospel truth, and transcendental knowledge is thus being distributed all over the world by the process of disciplic succession from time immemorial, since the beginning of the creation. Lord Brahma is the perfect liberated living being within the material world. And any sincere student of transcendental knowledge must accept the words and statements of Brahmaji as infallible. The Vedic knowledge is infallible because it comes down directly from the Supreme Lord unto the heart of Brahma. And since he is the most perfect living being, Brahmaji is always correct to the letter. And this is because Lord Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord who has earnestly accepted the lotus feet of the Lord as the supreme truth. In the Brahma Sanghita, which is compiled by Brahmaji, he repeats the aphorism, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I am a worshipper of the original personality of Godhead, Govinda, the primeval Lord. So whatever he says, whatever he thinks, and whatever he does normally in his mood are to be accepted as truth because of his direct and very intimate connection with Govinda, the primeval Lord. Sri Govinda, who pleasingly accepts the loving transcendental service of his devotees, gives all protection to the words and actions of his devotees. The Lord declares in the Bhagavad Gita, Konteya Pratijanihi, O son of Kunti, please declare it. The Lord asks Arjuna to declare. And why? Because sometimes the declaration of Govinda himself may seem contradictory to mundane creatures, but the mundaner will never find any contradiction in the words of the Lord's devotees. The devotees are especially protected by the Lord so that they may remain infallible. Therefore, the process of devotional service always begins in the service of the devotee who appears in the succession. The devotees are always liberated, but that does not mean they are impersonal. The Lord is a person eternally, and the devotees of the Lord, and the devotee of the Lord is also a person eternally. Because the devotee has his sense organs, even at the liberated stage, he's therefore a person always. And because the devotee's service is accepted by the Lord in full reciprocation, the Lord is also a person in his complete spiritual embodiment. The devotee's senses, being engaged in the service of the Lord, never go astray under the attraction of false material enjoyment. The plans of the devotee never go in vain, and this is due to the faithful attachment of the devotee for the service of the Lord. This is the standard of perfection and liberation. Anyone, beginning from Brahmaji down to the human being, is at once put on the path of liberation simply by his attachment and great eagerness for the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the primeval Lord. The Lord affirms this in the Bhagavad Gita. Mam cheyo vibhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Anyone, therefore, who is earnestly serious in heart and soul about being in intimate touch with the personality of Godhead in the relationship of transcendental loving service will always be infallible in words and action. The reason is that the Supreme Lord is absolute truth, and anything earnestly dovetailed with the absolute truth attains the same transcendental quality. On the other hand, any amount of mental speculation on the strength of material science and knowledge without any bona fide touch with the absolute truth is sure to be a mundane untruth and failure, simply due to not being in touch with the absolute truth. Such godless, unfaithful words and actions, however materially enriched, are never to be trusted. That is the purport of this important verse. A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness. We're trying to become accustomed to the reality that we are eternally individual persons. As Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor anyone on this battlefield. The Tvevaham Jatunasham, the Tum Naman Janadeva. Has that full implication hit you that you are eternally an individual person? You can't get rid of yourself. You cannot obliterate yourself by diving deep into karmic activity. The real you, the core being, the spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, will be around eternally. So, how are you going to deal with that fact? You are eternally responsible for your consciousness, for your activities. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are trying to impress upon you that you have to make a solution to the problems of existence. You can't duck it. Let me just dive into monetary gain. Let me just drown in sense gratification. Let me just try to be a nice person as society considers a nice person to be. You can adopt so many ruses, so many escape routes to try to get away from your constitutional situation as eternally an individual. Part of bhakti yoga means coming to grips with your eternal individuality. As Lord Chaitanya replied to Sanatan Goswami's question, who am I? Why am I suffering the threefold miseries? If I don't know these things, how can I benefit myself? Lord Chaitanya replied, Jivera Swarupoi, Krishnera Nityadas. You are eternally the servant of Krishna. So once we understand, we are eternally an individual. And many people have a hard time with that. They look for material ways out through suicide or just wasting this life on material gain. Or they try to concoct a spiritual way out by thinking spiritual liberation means extinction of the self. So in bhakti, by the mercy of Srimad Bhagavatam, you are face to face with the reality that you're always going to be around. Not in this body and mind, of course, but you'll always, as a spirit soul, as the Atma, you'll always be existing. Therefore, Krishna is asking you, please revive your original consciousness. Just like when you go to deep sleep at night, you forget everything about where you are, who you are, what you should be doing. If you're deeply asleep, if you travel a lot, as I do, you may find out that sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and you don't know where you are. It's nothing unusual. You just stare around in the dark room. What country am I in? What? So when you go into a deep sleep, you forget all about yourself. Similarly, we are in the deep sleep of material existence. We've forgotten all about our connection to Krishna. When this happened, we can't calculate. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, anadi karma phale, bhavi bhavana vajale. You can't trace out the beginning of your immersion in this endless dream of material existence. The Krishna conscious process is for waking you up. But first we have to decide, do I want to wake up? Maybe there are aspects of the material dream that we are attached to, and therefore we don't want to completely wake up. You know, sometimes when you're really tired, you're awake, but you're still half asleep. You just lay there in bed in a state of half awake, half being asleep. Either you don't want to get up because you face a lot of problems once you get out of bed, or you don't want to get up because, you know, even though you're halfway awake, your body still needs rest. So think about that state of being half awake and half asleep. Sometimes this is what our devotees want. Don't wake me completely, Krishna. There's parts of the dream that I'm still attached to. Let me be half awake and half asleep. Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to wake you up completely. Why should I wake up completely? What is so great about being fully awake? We require knowledge to answer that question. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is introducing you to the eternally and perfectly conscious world of Vaikuntha and Mahavaikuntha, where everything and everyone is pure consciousness, pure ecstatic consciousness. By understanding what is the reality of the waking world, we'll be motivated to become fully awake. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is working very hard, so to speak, to establish our understanding of eternal individuality and eternal personhood. We will have senses eternally, but those senses have nothing to do with the material body. And then there is the supreme individual person who, because he is a supreme individual person, the supreme individual person, can fully reciprocate with you. Now here we come to a problem. If we don't fully understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we won't trust the Supreme Absolute Truth because we want reciprocation. Who here can deny it? Everyone wants reciprocation. You want a reciprocal relationship with someone or something. If you can't find a person, get a dog, get a cat, get a rabbit. But you want a personal reciprocal relationship with someone or something. If you can't find any persons, you try to establish relationships with things. Electronic gadgets or furniture. The men have their toys. The ladies have their furniture, the household furnishings like that. So you try to establish relationships with that. As Bhagavatam explains, this is a perverted reflection of Shantaras, in which you have a neutral relationship with inanimate objects. You want relationship, but unless you understand Govinda Madhi Purusham, unless you understand Govinda as the original person, how will you actually push ahead in your spiritual life? You won't want to wake up completely. Therefore, knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is most important. You're doing devotional service. How will there be reciprocation for you? That's actually the number one question. I'm doing all this service. What's going to happen? What will be my result? If you don't understand Govinda Madhi, if you don't understand that original person, Govinda, you will seek reciprocation from the material world, from the dream world. And you won't want to wake up completely, because what happens when you wake up? Who's going to reciprocate with you? What do you get? In this way, there is a great difference between acceptance of God, belief in God, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Ordinary religion means to accept the authority of God. That means first you have to accept the existence of God, then you accept his authority. And then what's the next step in ordinary religion? Once you accept the existence and authority of God, then it's time for what? The benefits. God becomes the dole office. What do you call it? Center link? Yes. Give us this, God. Give us that. I have recognized you now. Let prosperity come. This is ordinary, mundane religion. But Bhagavatam has nothing to do with that. And it declares so right in the very beginning. Dharma projita kaitavacha paramonam asaranam satam. Sweeps out completely any concept of spiritual development mixed with material gain. Why is the Bhagavatam so sterilized of any kind of material ambition, whether karmic activity, mystic yoga, impersonalism? Why is it so sterilized of that? Because Govinda, the Adi Purusha, can reciprocate with you unlimitedly and perfectly. Therefore, the Bhagavatam sweeps everything else out. Because it's not our constitutional position eternally. We exist as individuals. And moreover, eternally we are Krishna's servant. So we have to come to grips with these two points. And then we'll be far beyond mundane religion. Once you accept that you are eternally an individual, and then you accept that you are eternally Krishna's servant, the next step is, how is Krishna going to reciprocate with me? And to answer that question, this is why Krishna displays his leelas, his pastimes. He's showing you, I've got what it takes. I'm qualified to reciprocate with you. By understanding Krishna's pastimes, you lose your fear that your life will be incomplete through bhakti. You lose your fear that you'll be left shortchanged. Like when you go to a shop and you pay for something, and then the person, the cashier, gives you change, and you walk out of the store and then look and realize, I didn't get enough change back. I don't know if it's happened. You know, you feel bad. I don't know. Maybe some of you will go back to the store and some of you will feel so embarrassed and I won't say anything. But it's an unpleasant feeling that you're shortchanged. So we have that fear about Krishna because we don't know Krishna. We've forgotten him. So therefore, Bhagavatam is trying to wake you up with knowledge of the original person and how that original person will reciprocate with you. So Krishna stages his transcendental leelas, his transcendental pastimes. He's showing you, I can handle any kind of love. I can handle any kind of devotion. Look at Putana. Somewhere other, she infiltrated Vrindavan. Though she was a witch, she disguised herself as a most beautiful woman. Even the older gopis were wondering, just see this most beautiful woman coming. So everyone trusted her as she approached Krishna to offer her breast milk to Krishna. And of course, Krishna took her milk and her life at the same time. So Uddhava comments in the third canto, Ahoyam Bhakti Stanakalakuta. Just see, who could be more merciful than Krishna? This Putana witch came to kill him by offering her poison breast milk. And Krishna gave her a position in his personal planet, Goloka Vrindavan. He gave her a position like his mother, like a nurse. So the acharyas point out, just see, if this is what Putana got, just think what a faithful devotee gets. So Krishna is staging his transcendental leelas to show you he can satisfy your need for friendship, your need for parental love, your need to serve the perfect master, your need for confidential conjugal affairs. Krishna is showing you he can handle all that perfectly and unlimitedly. So by hearing Krishna's pastimes, you lose your sense of insecurity. Insecurity means, I'm not sure, I don't know. Am I on solid ground or am I not? Can I trust you? Can I trust the future? I don't know. Insecurity. Of course, we are actually very helpless. Yet, material life gives us a false sense of stability, well-being, and security. Even if we have it, it just lasts for such a short time. Therefore, we can't really call it security and stability. We're very helpless, in a very helpless situation. When I was leaving the airport in Auckland to come here yesterday, we had to go down a long escalator to get to the gate. So there was the down escalator on one side, and the other side were stairs for people coming up. course, you could also walk down the stairs, too. So of course, we chose the escalator. And at the top of the escalator, we noticed there was like a 3.5-year-old girl looking totally bewildered and lost. She was just staring at the wall that separated the escalator from the stairway on the other side. And she was like, just totally helpless. She couldn't cope. She didn't know where she was. She didn't know what she was doing. So I pointed out to Bhakta Steve, who was with me, this is the state in which we should chant Hare Krishna. Such helplessness. You know, she was, everything was beyond her comprehension. An escalator, this thing going down, and she was just looking at the dividing wall that separated the escalator from the stairwell. She's just looking at the wall because she's short. So she's just looking at it, and just, you saw she couldn't compute. She couldn't figure out what's going on. She was trying to cry. She very softly to herself. She was totally helpless. Like, I don't know where I am. I don't know what I'm doing. What is this? Who's going to help me? So people were going down the escalator. They were, of course, wondering, where's the mother? Where's the mother? And then they would look down the escalator, and they saw this lady at the bottom of the escalator trying to walk up the stairs. Either the lady, the mother, had gotten on the down escalator and thought her child was right behind her, and then when she got to, and then as she got just a little bit further in the escalator, she realized, ah, my child's not with me. Of course, she couldn't go up on the escalator. Or she was trying to teach her child, trying to train her child. So anyway, when we went further down the escalator, we saw this woman, slightly anxious look on her face, obviously the mother, walking up the stairs to get to the top, to go down the escalator with her child. So I'll never forget how helpless that child looked. Like, there's no recourse. I don't know what's going on. The child was completely bewildered, didn't have a clue of what's going on. Completely helpless, completely dependent. So this is the state we should be in when we chant Hare Krishna. But we think we are materially competent. We think things are going to be all right by our arrangements. We'll sort things out somehow. We have faith in material nature. It will satisfy me at least some of the time. Not all the time, I understand. I've read Bhagavad Gita. Material nature is not going to satisfy me all the time, but some of the time. And that some of the time is just enough to make life worthwhile. It's just enough so I don't want to wake up completely. Oh, Krishna, let me be half awake and half asleep. This is our ignorance. So what does Krishna do? He shows you his transcendental leelas. He shows you his transcendental pastimes. So you understand what it's like to be fully awake. He attracts you. He's giving you the firm conviction that he can perfectly and unlimitedly reciprocate with you. Not in just one way. Krishna's showing you he can handle any kind of relationship. How can you reject a person like that? How can you ignore a person like that? Friendship. Romantic love. Parental love. Anything. Even if you want to be neutral, if you just want to be neutral, impartial. Krishna says, all right. You can handle that too. By hearing about Krishna, we lose our insecurity. And that is at the bottom of our material existence problem. Feel insecure. And obviously, how can you feel secure if we live as if we're amputated from Krishna? Now there's a problem in our trying to understand Krishna. It's a problem that Prabhupada constantly addressed. Can the ultimate reality, supreme source, actually be a person? Because if the ultimate source, the ultimate reality, is actually a person, Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham, how is all there, this material world? How are all these energies going on? How can a person do that? How can all this come from a person? So what the Mayavadis, of course, say, forget it. There's no ultimate person. It's impossible. How can all this variegated cosmic creation come from a person? It's mythology to think like that. Think of the example of the sun. If you don't know much about the sun, you'll just consider that you're in contact with the heat and light from the sun. You're a child who can't raise his or her head to see the sun planet. You'll just consider, around me is heat and light. But as you become more knowledgeable, you understand the heat and light is dependent on the sun. The energy is dependent on the energetic source. And that sun remains the sun, even though so many varieties come from sunshine. All the vegetation, all the trees, everything is sustained by the sun through the photosynthesis process. So even though the trees and the plants are not the sun, in one sense you could say they are the sun because they're completely dependent on the sun. Yet, if you burn a tree, you're not burning the sun. So in this way, Krishna is one with everything and different. So if an ordinary entity like the sun can give rise to so many varieties without the sun's being affected, why can't Krishna do that? The sun is so far away, yet it's giving rise to trees and plants. It's evaporating water out of the ocean. Sometimes the sun is creating lightning bolts. So on the one hand, the sun is making that trees grow. On the other hand, the sun can burn those same trees with a lightning bolt. All this the sun is doing without losing its nature, its individuality. So why not Krishna? As the Vedas say, Parasha Shakti Vividaiva Shriyate, the Upanishads tell us, the Supreme Absolute Truth has multifarious energies. So we need to understand the ultimate source and his energies. And then we can move on to appreciating his loving characteristics. So the Bhagavatam takes you through all these stages. How it is the ultimate source is a person. Brahma is giving you that testimony. He's telling Narada Muni, you must know for certain that whatever there is, either as cause or as effect, both in the material and spiritual worlds, is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How is it that Govinda is the cause of everything, directly and indirectly? We need to understand that. Otherwise, unconsciously, we'll be affected by impersonalism. How can the ultimate be a person? I mean, really? It sounds nice for me to believe. I wish it were true. But really? A person? A cowherd boy? Who likes to play with teenage girls? That is the source of everything? Sarvakarna Karna, the cause of all causes? You can take... It used to be just known as the Indian Mayavad approach. Now, of course, it's all over the world. That it doesn't matter what consciousness you have. Krishna consciousness, Durga consciousness, Christ consciousness, whatever. You know, it's all the same. Right? Yeah. It sounds very universal. It sounds very conducive. No obligations. Just be conscious. It's all equal. People call that same consciousness different things in different places. Sounds very advanced, doesn't it? Why? Why just Krishna? My dentist was just telling me that the other day. He said, isn't it so? He's from Mumbai. dental surgeon in Australia and New Zealand. Isn't it so? Christ consciousness, Krishna consciousness, Durga consciousness, Buddha consciousness. Yeah, isn't it so? He said, it's all the same. So I said, well, all dental surgeons are the same. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, no, they're all the same. He said, why is it that you are the only dental surgeon in Australia and New Zealand licensed with a certain laser technology? You're the only one who can do that. I don't think there's anything special about that. I can go to any dentist. It's all the same, right? Why do you think your dental surgery practice is so special? One dentist is the same as the other. They all have chairs, right? You sit in a chair. So why do you consider yourself to be on the cutting edge of dental technology? Mm-hmm. Why do you charge more than everyone else? What? Just because you think that your equipment is better, your skills are better. But then he said, oh, I see what you mean. In other words, there's something special about this dental surgeon. Similarly, there's something special about Krishna. And Bhagavatam is training you to understand, as Brahma is doing with Narada. Krishna is the source of all dependencies. Everyone is dependent on Krishna. So remember that example of the helpless 3.5-year-old child at the top of the escalator. I'll never forget that look on the child's face. The child couldn't compute, couldn't figure out what's going on. Didn't see any options. I could see how Arjuna felt in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The child saw no way out. Its mind was practically going blank. What do I do now? I don't know. Do I go right? Do I go left? So the child was just looking at the wall of the escalator, at the top of the escalator, just staring. It was just totally, you know, it was like a computer totally frozen up, you know, locked up. So I said to Bhakti Steve, who was with me, I said, this is how we should be when we chant Hare Krishna, this state of helplessness. But no, we think, I'm together, I'm competent, and I've got some things I want to experience in the dream world. I don't want to wake up completely. This testimony that Brahma is giving to Narada Muni is very important, because you're getting personal testimony, a personal account. Now you may say, how do we trust Brahma? How do we trust Narada? The Bhagavatam presents to you the greatest personalities who confirm each other. So Brahma is confirming to Narada. Narada will confirm that Brahma knows. And then so many personalities like that, far beyond the capacity of human beings today. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, in speaking with Arjuna, what I'm saying to you is confirmed by the Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra Paraischaya. Arjuna confirms, back to Krishna, all the greatest personalities, Asita, Deva, Vyasa, and even I am also saying, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have to look at the caliber of persons that are presenting knowledge to you. This is why it's important to hear what Brahma says to Narada. Your level of accepting authority is being upgraded. In other words, Bhagavatam is telling you, why listen to mundane, deluded persons? Why not listen to Brahma? Here's what Brahma is saying. Listen to him. You've got to listen to someone. So what you find in speaking to people is that they resist accepting spiritual authority, yet they are completely dependent on authorities. Mm-hmm. Like, is it Wednesday night in Auckland? at the loft. A few persons were hitting me with the usual. Look, said, no one knows. I said, really, no one knows? Well, how can you make a statement like that since you don't know? Because no one knows. They started scratching their head, I got told them that. So if no one knows, then just be quiet. Why are you speaking? No one knows, that's knowledge. No one knows. So if you say like that, people will applaud. Oh, very open-minded, very advanced. You understand that no one knows. But if you say Brahma knows, Narada knows, sounds very antiquated, mythological. Even in India these days, you go around saying, Brahma knows, Narada knows. People look at you like, what's wrong with you? You couldn't get a job in IT or something? It sounds old-fashioned, doesn't it? So therefore, the Bhaktivedanta purports are trying to train us in understanding what is real authority. And Brahma is speaking, O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, with great enthusiasm, with great focus, great earnestness. Whatever I say has never been proved to be false. Not because he's Brahma, but because of his being Brahma, being this Brahma specifically means he has the direct connection with Govinda. Brahma is presenting himself in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, there are so many universes with so many Brahmas, but the Brahma in this particular universe, he's giving you his realization. Govinda Madhi Purushottam Ramajami. Because of my connection, he says, to Govinda, whatever I say is perfect. Not because of me on my own. So again, you see the dependency. So much of our spiritual advancement is about reviving that eternal dependency on Krishna. Getting over that false state of amputation and realizing we cannot function unless we are serving Krishna because we're his parts. Just like the hand can't function unless it's connected to the whole body. So how is it that God is everywhere? God is everywhere, both directly and indirectly. He's present everywhere by his expansions. He's present everywhere also by his energies. So, yes, you can look at your hand and say, this is God's hand. This is the hand of God. You can look at your hand and say, the hand of God. But it doesn't mean you're God. That is the point. Yes, it's the hand of God. In that, it's God's property. Meant for engaging in his service and giving pleasure to him. Just as Krishna's transcendental limbs of his transcendental body, Satchinanda Vigraha, all act for his pleasure. Similarly, our hands belong to Krishna also, and they're meant for acting for his pleasure. So that is how you can see the presence of the Supreme Absolute Truth everywhere. Yes, your hand is the hand of God in that. You're not God, but your hand is meant to engage in the service of God. Similarly, the whole universe is God. Often you meet persons these days who say like that. The universe is God. The cosmos is God. This is like considered advanced environmentalism to understand that the whole universe is alive. It's God. And that's it. You just be in harmony environmentally and then that's the ultimate goal of life. So yes and no. Yes, the whole cosmos is God in that it's the energy of Krishna. And you can't separate Krishna's energy from Krishna. The example given by Srila Prabhupada, cow and the milk. The milk is the cow, yes, because without the cow, milk has no existence. At the same time, if you boil the milk, you're not boiling the cow. This is a chincha beta beta tutfa. Simultaneous learning difference. The milk is the cow, and then again, it's not the cow. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm everywhere, but then again, I'm not everywhere. It's to the mundane eye, it sounds like, to the mundane ear, it sounds like word jugglery. Everything rests upon me, but I'm not there. You say, Krishna, make up your mind. If everything rests upon you, you are there. But Krishna says, no. Pashame yoga maishram. Just look at my mystic potency. I'm there, but then again, I'm not there. It's resting upon me, then again, it doesn't rest on me. So Krishna is giving you insight into something that can't be grasped with material intelligence. It can only be grasped through bhakti yoga. How everything is one with Krishna and then different from it. With your ordinary intelligence, no matter how high your IQ is, you can only go one side or the other side. Everything is one with Krishna. You'll meet persons who say that. And other side, everything is different from Krishna. You'll meet persons who say like that. But both simultaneously, that is achincha, inconceivable. So that is what Lord Chaitanya propounded. The tattva, the science of how everything is one with the Supreme Absolute Truth and different simultaneously. So it's not that at one moment Krishna decides I'm one with everything. Okay, now it's time to switch. I'll go to the other side. Now I'm different from everything. It's all happening all at once. That is why Krishna says, Pashame Yoga Maishram, just see my mystic potency, Arjuna. The more we hear about Bhagavad Dharma, the science of the Supreme, the more we lose our insecurity and we start to trust Krishna. You can actually reciprocate with me. I can actually depend upon you. So this is what Brahma is telling Narada. He's saying, because of my connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whatever I say is always true. Not because of me, but because of my connection. So this is what bhakti yoga is all about. The link, the connection to Krishna through parampara. Brahma is speaking in parampara to Narada Muni. Narada Muni will speak to Vyasadeva and so on. Vyasadeva will speak to Shukadeva Goswami. So then you may say, all right, you've got all these extraordinary personalities saying something. So number one, it's impressive because they're extraordinary. So therefore, I'll pay attention to what they're saying. But number two, still, how do I know it's true? I accept that I'm dependent on authority, no matter what I do, materially or spiritually. But really, beyond just trusting them, trusting Brahma, trusting Narada Muni, how, what other recourse do I have? And of course you have another recourse. You have the process given by Brahma, by Narada Muni, so you can verify what they're saying. The hearing leads immediately to action. Otherwise it's not hearing. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the fire of transcendental knowledge burns. It's not theoretical, armchair speculation. That fire of transcendental knowledge does things, transforms things, makes things happen, just like a fire when it's burning. Similarly, Krishna explains that when you're situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, a boat takes you places. It's not theoretical. So number one, we are hearing from the greatest authorities, incomparable in their greatness. And number two, they give us the process by which, if we're serious, we can verify what they have said. So this is the glory of bhakti. Incomparable authorities means you have the best chance for dependency. And we cannot get away from dependency. Materially, you're dependent in so many ways on the government. You're dependent on nature. You're dependent on whatever remnant of family you have. So many ways you're dependent. So Bhagavatam is telling you, understand the eternal and ultimate dependency. Then you can chant Hare Krishna, calling out to Krishna like a child calls for mother. All right, are there any questions? Comment from Aniruddha Prabhu. Yes.
Right.
And in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the devotees are always liberated. The devotees are especially protected by the Lord so that they may remain infallible.
That's right. So we see even in the case of Srila Prabhupada, where he attempted various enterprises, and some of them weren't successful. You know, we can say by material countries, they weren't infallible. And even now, you know, if we can ask ourselves as, you know, devotees, we attempt things and says, you know, that our plans will be infallible. So what kind of devotees are basically referring to? Because it seems that on one hand, you know, if you're a devotee, you're going to be protected by Krishna, but on the other hand, a lot of the things that we do, they're not, you know, they're not without fault. They're not without so what is it, what kind of devotee is being referred to, or is there some kind of proviso or fine print about, you know, what you do and how it relates to being successful?
There are two elements to your point as I hear it. Number one, what is infallibility in bhakti? And number two, what are the different types of devotees in bhakti? So sometimes in this purport, you'll find that Srila Prabhupada is using the term devotee in the sense of complete perfection. In other words, a real devotee is this. And other times in purports, he uses the term devotee in a more general way. But you see the example of the unripe mango and the ripe mango. If you leave the unripe mango in the sun, even though it's unripe today, sooner or later it's going to become ripe. So in that sense, it's a mango is a mango. So sometimes Prabhupada uses the word devotee in a general way. Whether ripe or unripe, devotee. We like that. It's very encouraging. I'm a devotee. Got my neck beads. And sometimes he uses the word devotee in the strictest sense. Ripe mango. So Bhagavatam gives you that full perspective. Obviously in this purport, where he says the devotees are always liberated, he's referring to the ripe mango. So you have to be able to have a feel for these purports as you read them. And so you, by practice in reading, by dedication in reading Prabhupada's books, you'll get a feel for when he's using the word devotee in a general broad sense, like mangoes, whether they're ripe or unripe, or when he's precisely referring to the mango in perfection, the ripe mango with all the juice coming out. Now, about infallibility in bhakti, it is not material infallibility. Infallibility in bhakti for a devotee means, regardless of material loss or gain, the devotee is pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the perfection. What about the example of Kolavecha Sridhar? He felt so embarrassed when Lord Chaitanya, with great delight, came to his broken down hut, picked up his rusty water pot with holes in it, and drank water out of it. Kolavecha Sridhar just collapsed on the ground. Oh my gosh. And Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy, tasting the water from that rusty water pot full of holes. Now, everyone here, almost everyone here has been to India. How many of you would just pick up any rusty water hobbit holes and drink water from it? You wouldn't do that. Well, Lord Chaitanya did that. So where's the infallibility here? Look at the water pot. It was full of holes. It's rusty. But Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy drinking from it. Whereas Kolavacha Sridhar, in the humility of his bhakti, oh, what a fallible situation. My water pot is just disgusting. My water pot is contaminated by me. It's not even in a decent water pot contaminated by me. It's a contaminated water pot that's rusty and full of holes. But Lord Chaitanya saw perfection, infallibility, because of the bhakti. What about when Krishna went to the capital city of the Kauravas? And Duryodhana knew he was coming. And Duryodhana is famous for throwing the greatest lunch banquets. Just like, you know, you go to an Indian wedding, you know, more food than anyone can eat. So many different types of preparations, all meant to impress, you know, the guests, you know, but the prestige of the, you know, of the family that's arranging the marriage. No one expects even that you're going to eat all the food. But it's all, you know, it's all show, status, prestige. How many preparations have you seen at a wedding? Who knows? Five? You've been to weddings of 500? Anyone top that? Huh? So, Duryodhana was doing like that. And he knew Krishna's coming. Where was Duryodhana living? What city? Yeah, I thought so. Hastinapura. So, okay. Of course, Krishna and I have a problem. I don't like him. He doesn't like me. But anyway, family diplomacy. One of my children is married to one of Krishna's children. So, you know, you've got to treat the relatives nicely. That still goes on in India today. You might not even like the other in-laws, but still, you know, if they come to your city, you have to invite them for lunch and let them stay in your home. So Duryodhana was doing like that. Certainly his relationship with Krishna was antagonistic. But anyway, we're linked by marriage. Our families are linked by marriage. I'll invite Krishna to a huge banquet, my famous lunches. But Krishna didn't go. Where did Krishna go? He went to Vidura's house. And Vidura was comparatively poor. But Krishna went there with great enthusiasm, with great zeal. He didn't even have an invitation. But he's attracted by Vidura's devotion. So when he got there, Vidura and his wife were, of course, were so happy to see Krishna. They tried, let's get something to offer to Krishna. So the wife was the one who was processing the famous bananas that they offered to Krishna. Mentioned in Nectar Devotion. It was the wife. She was peeling the bananas and throwing away the pulp and offering Krishna the peels. And Krishna was eating the peels. So what does that say about infallibility and bhakti? Krishna was accepting the pure devotion. That is the mark of perfection. Vidura and his wife's bhakti was infallible, even though they were making a material mistake. Of course, that doesn't give us liberty to serve Radha Radha Balaba, serve Sri Radha Balaba, you know, banana peels. And you know the famous example of Sanatana Goswami, a poor mendicant keeping his Radha Krishna deities in the tree, serving them dry chapatis. And the deity spoke to him, can't you at least put some salt on these dry chapatis? Sanatana said, I'm sorry, this is the best I can do. Will you please accept? So in this way, we can see our conception of material infallibility breaks down when it approaches bhakti. Because the perfection of bhakti is the devotion. That devotion can conquer Krishna. Brijavashyataha. He likes to be subordinate to his devotees. When Mother Yashoda put little Krishna down after feeding him, or in the middle of feeding him, to tend to the milk boiling over on the stove, was that a mistake or not? But Krishna decided, she's neglecting me. He decided to make it into a mistake just to increase the bhakti, just to stir the rasa more. So how do you say who's wrong, who's right? What about when Krishna ate dirt? Or did he? Is it really ever resolved in the Bhagavatam whether Krishna ate the dirt or not? It's not important. But with our material analysis, it's very important. Was there dirt in his mouth or not? But for the Leela, it's not important. The important thing is Mother Yashoda's response. Why is my child eating dirt? Oh no. I've tried to give him the best milk sweets, and now his friends are saying he's eating dirt. Even Balaram is saying that. It's got to be true. But you don't see in the Bhagavatam's presentation of that Leela any firm corroboration. Was there dirt in his mouth or not? It's not the point. And when Mother Yashoda looked into his mouth, through his mouth, she saw into the belly. She saw a lot more than dirt. So the whole Leela is just about this Vatsalya Prem of Mother Yashoda's. When Krishna decided, okay, enough of her metaphysical speculation, thinking, what's this in Krishna's mouth I'm seeing in the belly, the whole universe, and how insignificant I am. When Krishna said enough is enough, his energies covered her over. And she just thought, whatever I saw, it must be like a dream. I don't even know what I saw. Anyway, he's my little child. Let me feed him. Let me love him. That's infallibility. Now, later it said that when Krishna was in the Munjaranya forest, and there was the forest fire threatening the cows, the cowherd boys, and they all turned to Krishna. They all appealed to Krishna. Why did Krishna tell them to close his eyes? To close their eyes, excuse me? Some say, and Vrindavan is full of rumors, you see. That's why the material world's full of rumors. All kinds of gossip and rumors going on in Vrindavan. What is Krishna doing? What did he do last night? Who was he with last night? Whose house did he break into stealing? Rumors, gossip, all the time. Has to be, otherwise how could it be in the material world? So, there was a rumor in Vrindavan when they heard about this incident of Krishna swallowing the forest fire in the Munjaranya forest. The rumor was that Krishna told the cowherd boys to close their eyes because he was thinking, I got in trouble so much, I got chastised so much by my mother for supposedly eating dirt. If it's known that I swallow a forest fire, what is she going to say? Okay, close your eyes. You didn't see anything. That's just rumors going on in Vrindavan. The achara is presented in that way. It could be, but, you know, it's Vrindavan rumors. But they accept the reality that Vrindavan means rumors. The whole point is the rasa. Now you might say, was it true or was it not? But what the perfection is the rasa, the flavor of the loving affairs. It's not like police department truth. Did you do the crime or did you not? No. In Vrindavan, it's all about flavors, loving affairs, exchanges. So infallibility in bhakti is different from the material conception. One Srila Prabhupada explained, because the devotees were asking, what does it mean, Sakshad Hari, that the spiritual master is directly Hari? What is the perfection that Sakshat Hari implies. And she'll probably explain, the Acharya's perfection is that he preaches the bhakti, Bhagavad Dharma. That is the perfection. Otherwise you'd say, well, a liberated soul like Brahma and Narada, Srila Prabhupada, we should be able to go up and say, what was the score in the baseball game in New York City last night? You should know everything and have infallible knowledge. But, no. The infallible infallibility means always acting to please Krishna. So much so that even it can seem there's a mistake. Just like in the construction of the Juhu Temple. Before Srila Prabhupada went to America, he saw that land. You know from the Lilamrita, Prabhupada Lilamrita, let there be a temple. He thought, this is a jungle land at that time in Juhu. But he said, this would be a great place for a temple. And then when he came back from the USA after starting Krishna consciousness in the West, he got into negotiations with the owner of that property to buy it. And you know the huge battle that happened after that. The man was a demon. He tried to cheat in so many ways. He was a habituated cheater. So after the battle was over, what did Prabhupada say? He said, actually, with my business acumen, I ordinarily would have known that this man was a cheater and I would have never entered into a deal with him, but Krishna covered me. So how do you analyze that with your sense of material infallibility? I would have known ordinarily. I would have never gone into a business deal with him. But Krishna covered me, so I go ahead. So infallibility and bhakti is a very, very different thing than infallibility as materially known. Infallibility in bhakti means that the devotee always acts for Krishna's pleasure, and actually Krishna wants to come under the control of such a devotee. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.